just to say that I, Georgina asked me to do something a few weeks ago, and I said, "Yeah, but what? I've got no idea what I should be doing with you." And what we decided was to pick up on a theme from one of my blogs from a few weeks ago, which was about remaining innovative and creative within your business. Now, if I put this into context in terms of the way I work and the types of businesses that I work with, I work with businesses that are very small teams. I mean, usually we're looking at, say, one or two people maximum in the business. And so they often go into their business with a massive passion for something that they want to sell to people or want people to buy into. As a consequence, they're often time, often money poor, but they're definitely time poor. And they also then often get to a point where they've lost their mojo a bit. So they come in very upbeat and full of ideas, but after the slog of doing all of the delivery, then all of the backroom stuff, it sometimes gets a little bit problematical for them, and they tend to get stuck in a bit of a silo. And what I've noticed over the last weeks and the situation that we found ourselves in is that there's been a distinct difference between two approaches. So we've got in terms of the people that I'm helping, we've got those that have in a certain way embraced what the situation they found themselves in and said, okay, this is an unusual situation, but how do I deal with it? What do I do? What do I do with the offer that I've actually got? And are there interesting alternative ways that I can deal with it? And then we've got others that have basically said, I'm going on furlough, can't do anything in terms of this, can't do anything about it. And actually, quite a few of the businesses, I thought to myself, you could, because you're creative businesses. And so I think there's been this attitude in terms of, no, I can't think of a way of getting more innovation or creativity into my business. So what I thought would be really interesting from my perspective, as much as anything, is to find out in terms of the people that you're working with, if you've come across any really good ideas that people have had, or any of the businesses that you work with, whether they've changed direction, brought on new products or services, or anything like that as a result of the situation that we find ourselves in. Just wait.
What some they're not businesses I work with, but they're businesses who are in a business group that I belong to. And what they and they're like therapists, and so they have like beauty salons. So obviously they were shut down quite quickly. So what some of them did, and I thought it was really good, they start doing daily videos about this is how you do skin care, this is how you look after your skin. And then obviously they have products that people can buy. So by seeing the skincare routine, they could then sell their products, and then the products can be sold online. So I thought that was quite innovative because they didn't do that before COVID lockdown, but it's something they're doing, and I think they'll probably carry on doing it. So I think that was a really good way of adapting to what was happening. I myself, I actually, I've been carrying on as business as usual, but it's given me the time to launch my podcast, to update my website. So it's given me time to sort of, sit back and do the things that been on the back burner, which I haven't had time to do because my capacity, I was at full capacity, but I've not had as many queries during lockdown as I would normally. So I've done that. So I don't know if that's the sort of thing you were looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it's all this economies of scale. Somebody I know very well opened a restaurant in South London in January. and it was doing really, really well, fantastically well, actually. And obviously come lockdown shut. Now he will be reopening the restaurant, but he now has a nationwide wine delivery service as well as part of what he does, which grew out of his customers in South London saying, can we get hold of some bottles of wine from you? And it just basically flew out from South London to the whole of London, and now it's UK wide. So I think that kind of thing I'm finding really, really interesting. And I don't want to use the P word, because it annoys me really as much as the NN word, if you know what I mean. But I'm wondering if in terms of your clients, whether you've seen anything like that or anything that we might be able to share as good practice, maybe ideas for how businesses could think about their delivery model. Because I don't think, even though we're getting some of the relaxation on lockdown, I don't think that we're going to be in a position that we were back in January or February in terms of things being open. Simon?
Yeah, that's a really good point, Kathy. So what I've encouraged my clients to do, and it was born from the fact that one of my clients did exactly this, so I managed to thread it into my other clients, is to think about their business more holistically. So not look at a particular service, but think of what we do and what can we do now to continue to A, communicate with their customers, but B, also sell to them, maybe in a way that we haven't done before. So for example, I've got a marquee hire company that I work with, and they predominantly work in obviously the hospitality and party sector, and they provide anything from, you know, huge marquees to the back garden marquees. The back garden marquees, it's not a very big part of his business, but what he has caught up on is that he was finding that as we were coming out of lockdown, so it was being muted around about probably 3 weeks ago, that the inquiries for the garden marquees were suddenly growing. So he's immediately invested in, with his bounce back loans, he's using it for exactly the right reasons. He's invested in new garden marquees that can be put up by one man in an hour, and he can probably do four in a day or five in a day. And he's got bookings now right from the middle of July through to August and September. Mm. And that's a product that he never pushed before. It was just there. But because obviously I think people are going to get together again, and they're going to look forward to it, and they see a relaxing of the social distancing law, they're going to party, but they're probably going to concentrate on self-partying rather than going out and partying, which is the flavour that's coming through.
Did they come up with that idea themselves, Simon, or was it something that you sort of...
No, So I said to him, you know, how can we look at... Because his business stopped overnight. And the other thing that we did through a collective thought process with him, it was me and three of his directors, is that we realised that the industries that are still working, in particularly the National Health Service, will need extra capacity in their buildings, which they haven't got. So, but what they would like is huge marquees in the grounds or in their car parks for overspill or for health and safety or for cleaning down or for refreshment breaks, because they can't meet the social distancing requirement within the hospital itself. So he put, I think he had about a dozen marquees set up just within NHS hospitals. And then he got an inquiry from a construction company, and they were allowed back, I think, at the beginning or the end of April, beginning of May. And they said, we've been to so-and-so hospital, and we see they've got one of your marquees. We need one of those marquees for our health and safety and canteen facilities, because we can't use the on-site ones. So that's grown as well. So, you know, out of everything, for some businesses and for some products, comes a ray of hope, hopefully.
Yeah. And I think that whole lateral thinking is something that we should be encouraging. I don't know whether you find this yourselves, but I find that particularly when I start working with a new client, they're very vertical in terms of their thought processes. You know, I sell this, I sell this, I sell this, and I sell it to these people, these people, these people, which, you know, in marketing terms, we do need to have quite a strong focus. But actually, if you then start them thinking along the line in terms of, you know, it'll appeal to that group of people, therefore this group of people have different but similar needs, maybe that's an area we need to start looking in as well. So, Tarina, you had something you wanted
to say. Yeah, sorry. What I was going to say is, and I've done that myself, so I like, my coach calls it a portfolio business. So, so a lot of my work is doing the CQC applications for my clients, but my one-to-one work is obviously at a higher price. So then what I slotted in was, I'll do a review only. You do the bulk of the data inputting and I'll do a review. So obviously that's half price because I'm not having to do as much work. And then what I'm working on now is actually doing an online course, which will be cheaper again, but they can just do it at their pace, do the application. So I'm completely out of the picture. And then that ties in really nicely with my book. So I've sort of, rather than just one thing, I've sort of spread, still a similar thing, but what I do. And I'm really enjoying that. And I hadn't thought I'd be doing all that, but you know, especially in the last 12 months, I've really grown as a mentor, as a coach, and as a business. And I'm loving it.
You'd have been doing it a lot sooner if you'd been working with me, because the establishment of the product staircase is the first thing you always work on with people. Absolutely. Any other folk got any examples of where they've seen innovative practice, Chris?
Yeah, I've had a number of clients who have, people have been talking to, they just, everything went to zero in late March, but people have said they've put their business online. A couple of people who do yoga, lady I speak to, she was charged, she was doing yoga classes in the village hall with six people at £15 a time, £20 a time, so £120, couldn't do it, went online doing the same yoga for the same length of time with 40 people at £10 a time. So she's a lot better off without any, and the money's in her pocket rather than paying, simply paying a higher charge. I had someone who was doing children's yoga who was doing similarly. I was out and about in my local town centre this morning. I bumped into a physiotherapist who we go to, and she was telling me about how she's had to put everything online. She's a private physiotherapist, so she's a chartered physiotherapist. She has a private practice. And I said, well, what were you doing about charging? She said, well, yes, I can go. I've been doing diagnosis. I've been doing consultation online, chargeable, getting paid for it after having hit zero in late March and April. So she'd sort of reconfigured, reorganised with existing patients and clients going online, and then she moves on from there, but managed to maintain some kind of income stream in that. And I've been saying to clients, look, go online. If you can get online, go online. And I saw some stats in the paper on the TV about the massive increase in online activity online, which I know we're all aware of. And I may have mentioned this one before. I was with talking to the Gloucester Growth Hub about 3-4 weeks back, and I went to a webinar they were doing on business resilience in their locality. There was a lady there who ran a shoe shop in Cheltenham Town Centre, absolutely hammered because, you know, just not happening. She put it online, spent some money putting it online, but it's a 100-year-old business, family business, just going from strength to strength. You know, fantastic sales in April, fantastic sales in May. Yes, she spent money. Yes, she put big banners up in the window in the shop, pushing people towards the website. But she really made a big modal shift from retail presence in a town centre, you know, a significant town centre online, and was doing really well. So the immediate question is, why am I paying out £25,000 a year in rates? What rent? Why am I paying Why am I paying business rates? Why am I paying all the utility bills when I can go and put it as a farm conversion on the town centre, sell more, make more, get a better margin, and get a better net, a better black figure bottom line? So a very interesting case in point, very, very interesting case in point. But a big shift, you put money into it though, but have to recognise that.
I'm just thinking that what would be a really good idea would be if we could capture these examples.
Yes.
Because I think it would be something really useful, even if it were in just a blog on the ABM website, particularly then if we could do some backlinks to whichever companies we're talking about, because that would actually give them a little bit of a boost as well. But I think that I think what's happened is that there's been a massive amount of creativity over the past 3 months. People have actually thought their way out of problems. And obviously, you know, there are things that with taking things online would be an answer. But even down to Simon's example of the marquee people, I've worked with a client in the past who is a she's a seamstress basically, but she teaches kids to sew and she does a massive recycling of clothes program, that sort of thing. Immediately her business moved into creating PPE equipment, and it's opened up a massive new market for her generally. So there are people there buying her products from her now that will continue to buy products from her because they know the quality of what she produces. So I think if we could actually start to collate this kind of information. So if you want to email them to me, I'm more than happy to see whether I can put something into a blog type format in terms of, you know, here's some of the businesses that we know have done well, because I think there's some really great stories going on in there. So I think we need to show people that that creativity is out there and give them those examples. I was going to ask the question about the whole concept of creativity, in as much as, do you think it's something that can be taught?
That's a really good question. So I don't know if you, I'm sure many people know, but the brain's actually got two halves, and the brain tends to have a lean towards either strategic or creative. I found out later on in life, probably my late 20s actually, that I've got a strategic and a creative brain, which caused me all sorts of trouble at school, because academically I was crap. Everything I did, I was mediocre. No, I wasn't crap. I didn't understand. So the A levels that I got were in art and economics, you know, where do they go? They don't fit. But I had a passion for being creative, and I got a passion for business and understanding the theory of business and how it works and how you can implement it in practice. And then I found I'm using my creativity in a marketing and sales sense, because I'm able to, and I've managed to understand them around about probably 28, 30. Certainly when I started my successful business, I just put them to good use, but it took me a long time to get to grips with that conflict, I guess. And I think we're naturally creative, but I don't think many people put that creativity to use because they find something else to do and go down another pathway.
It's really in the blog I mentioned that sort of sparked this conversation, the blog I wrote a few weeks ago. I talk about five things that you can do to perhaps boost that, and number five is do something childlike. And one of the problems I think that we have is that a lot of that creative spark that every kid has, you know, you give them a cardboard box and it'll be a rocket ship, or it'll be a castle, or it'll be, you know, it can be anything. It's a bit like when you give a cat a box, it becomes the toy, you know. And what happens is all of that gets squashed out because they get put into a treadmill. At 13, you've got to decide what you're going to do with the rest of your life. So we start to suppress that. And then what you get is you get this branching out of kids that perhaps go along, you know, quite happily, well, as happily as possible along the academic route. And then you get the ones that don't, because their brains just aren't wired that way. And somehow or another, that's seen as being wrong. And I think that's something that we need to think about as adults, as to how do we bring that sort of creative spark back into what we're doing. David, do you have something you want to say?
Yeah, just a point, because you said something about something getting squashed out. And one of the things about I've discovered of creativity, thinking of most of us are working with organisations, is that creativity can be snuffed out very easily. Many businesses are run by a dynamic person. Only a dynamic person will get a business off the ground. Mm. Therefore, when someone in the teams has this creative, fuzzy idea, it's easy, you know, for the leader to say, oh, that's a stupid idea, and they get squashed really quickly. So I think it ties in with culture and allowing permission to be creative and honouring that. And even if it's a jolly stupid idea, maybe actually there's something within that that can be used. So I think encouraging that and giving permission for that and honouring that is really important, because otherwise they'll get snuffed out often.
Yeah, I think that's so interesting. Yeah, that entrepreneurialism within organisations. I worked in the public sector for quite a few years of my career, and the idea of coming up with an idea was soon
scary. You don't do it.
pushed in the direction, and I think that's there are problems within organisations if they do have this hierarchical model where you have more management than leadership. And I know we spoke a few weeks ago about the difference between management and leadership, whereas a leader might encourage that entrepreneurial idea driven thing, whereas when it's just management, no, that's not your job, maybe get back in your box and we won't be looking at that. So Siobhan, you had something you wanted to say.
Yeah, I was just going to say that this is all very interesting. I think sometimes you need to give people permission to be creative, and sometimes saying to them, wow, what you've just said or suggested is a really creative idea or solution, that kind of sparks a memory of, oh, okay, I can be creative and I am creative and therefore I shall continue to be. And it's just building on everything everyone's saying. We forget that we can. And sometimes just really confronting it and reminding people that, yeah, this is good and this is creative, reflects on people that they are good at it and they have this skill. I think we do forget.
Siobhan, can I just pick up a point you made there? Because you've said something that's really helpful to me. You were saying about someone makes a creative comment and we say that's really creative. Because even if it genuinely is a stupid idea, and it may be a stupid idea, if it goes in the creative box to be honoured as that's a creative idea, and therefore acknowledging that, and then someone else might go away and come and say, actually, that crazy idea, let's all give ourselves a 10-time pay rise.
We can use that.
But we can do something with it.
Yeah.
And it's getting it into that, that permission level, moving it on. And the place
if we
where
didn't
it can
have crazy ideas, we wouldn't have a light bulb. And I think that's the thing that everything that we've got around us came from somebody having a crazy idea at some point. What if we could do that?
Indeed, but actually,
become something.
If I can make one further point, my understanding is, I may be mistaken, is that one man didn't invent the light bulb. It was actually a team effort. And often we think, oh, so-and-so, he's creative, she's creative. But the greatest creativity often is a team approach.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Chris.
Yeah, thank you. Going on from there, I suppose the classic situation with creativity is putting men on the moon. That was a dream, that was an idea. Okay, it's 51 years ago, not far off the day. And I remember as a youngster, I followed it sort of very enthusiastically, really did captivate me at that time. But the phrase I remember, I don't know if it's true or not, but NASA got it so good with their teamwork and with everyone feeling part of everyone being part of the dream imagination, was the man sweeping up at Cape Canaveral, and the question is, what are you doing? I'm helping put a man on the moon. They got it that far. They got everyone thinking about it. So I'm also going to say about the difference between creativity and imagination. I think creators, we see creators being composers and musicians and actors and the creative directors of big advertising agencies and people who create wonderful and fantastic art forms. I think imagination perhaps is something which we probably ought to sort of perhaps recognise, but everyone has imagination, everyone has ideas. I think it's very important that they are brought forward. And I certainly think the point about, call it creativity, call it imagination, being suppressed in business. I've seen it in the past, I've seen it personally, I've seen it with clients as well, where ideas are not used, are not exploited to the detriment of the business. And the ideas of the ideas box, or bring forward one idea a month, as the boss, give me one idea, let's look at it. But let's also look at it on the basis that it may not be accepted, it may not be viable. Okay, the big idea is I want a pay rise, but what have you got? What can you bring forward? What ideas have you got? What ideas have you got about how we develop a product? What is it got about how we develop a service? No one's got the monopoly of ideas, especially a small business where you need that sort of team collegiate view to bring ideas together, to get things to work and to exploit them and to turn them into products and services. I think it's very, very important. So I think imagination is probably as important as creativity. And we've all got it. It's a matter of how you use it and have the opportunity to use it.
Yeah, thank you. Does anybody have any examples of maybe good practice in this in organisations that they've worked with where individuals, you know, like the team collective has been encouraged to put forward ideas, creative ideas, entrepreneurial type ideas? Has anybody got any examples of that in practice?
Yeah, so I work with a team of, or a company of developers, IT developers in Farnborough in Hampshire. And I think they've got about 90 developers within the company. So they have something called light bulb meetings. It's quite interesting what David said about it wasn't just one man who developed the light bulb, it was a team, and that's exactly their thought process, is the light bulb meetings are to bring people together, and they're completely informal. I think they're held once a month about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and they last for 20 minutes only. And people can come in with their ideas, and it can be anything and everything. It doesn't even have to be about the business, but it could be something that the business could do in the future. And it's a melting pot for ideas and innovation. And it's so, I mean, it goes beyond that, because it's not just the 20 minutes, it's the culture that spreads throughout the company because those meetings exist. And everybody knows that if they've got, you know, that stupid idea, if you want to call it, they're not going to be laughed at. It is going to be accepted, and someone will go, you know what, we could do that.
I
work with a lot of people who describe themselves as creative. Quite often it's more what I describe as butterfly brain, and it's more to do with prevarication. So they quite often describe themselves as perfectionists, but they're not, just putting stuff off. And this is something I learned a long time ago in my working career. One of the things I encourage them to do is have a combination of two things. It's one thing I call a tickler file, which I now know is something like some kind of sex thing, but it was never done with that intent, with that intention. So I get them to have a tickler file, and I get them to have what I call a Eureka book. And the idea of the tickler file is every time they see something that tickles their imagination or their creativity, they put it into this file. So whether they pick up a piece of marketing literature and they think, I really like the way this is laid out, I wonder if there's anything I might be able to do in my business with something like this, or what a great website, I wish that could happen on my website, or what a great product idea or a service idea, I wonder what you might. So I get them to put all of those ideas into a file, and I actually encourage it as a paper thing, not as an online thing, and I get them to go through that once a month to ask the question, is it time for this yet? Is it time for this yet? Because that will give them time for their brains to really start taking on board whether these things are going to be right for them or not. And then the Eureka book is something that goes alongside it. And this is a book where they record what they're doing. So today I had this idea. and then going further forward, they'll get things like recommendation, testimonials, or whatever might go in there. But it's a great way of looking back over time, because I also find with a lot of businesses is that they do have ideas and they do innovate and they do it over time. But so that, because they're doing it in baby steps, they quite often forget the steps it's taken them to get there. Whereas if they've got something they can look back over, it's like, oh, crikey, a year ago, this is what we were doing. And look, this is where we are now. How did we get there? And the whole idea behind that then is you've got this like rinse and repeat model. Well, if we went from there to there to get to where we are now, can we do that now with this other thing? And that those two things working in conjunction. So somewhere where you dive in on a regular basis. And I think in a larger organization, you know, it could be something that, I don't say like the old comments box, but the idea that if there was somewhere where people had an idea and just said, look, this is an idea, because it's all very well and good having a meeting at a certain time in an afternoon, but unless you've actually stored your ideas up, it's like, come into this meeting now, be creative. It can be a little bit of a problem. So it's actually encouraging it as a continuum rather than necessarily a time driven thing. Has anybody come across anything like that in what they've done? I know that's how they design the board, by the way.
I have come across similar, and I agree, Cathy, those are great ideas and they definitely work. And the other thing that I've also been involved with clients is looking at the actual physical spaces that people work within. I mean, obviously we're in a different world at the moment, but I've worked with clients who were relocating, and one of the things they wanted to do was inspire that creativity and imagination. So they made sure that they had plenty of indoor and outdoor spaces that operated in different ways. And then they made it very clear to employees that they could have a meeting over a coffee sitting on a sofa, or they could go for a walk, or they could go outside, or they could do whatever they needed to do alone or with other people to get away from their desks and their screens and kind of allow that creativity to come through. And I think for some people that makes a huge difference, because, you know, sometimes it's hard to be creative staring at a screen, but, you know, you get outside and your mind wanders and you can kind of tap into those ideas that aren't necessarily bubbling to the surface elsewhere. So that for me is also, when I'm looking to be inspired, I'll go for a walk or something.
Yeah, change your space, change your mind. I think that was number one on my list, the five.
Oh. I'm sorry, I missed the beginning. Did you already say that? I'm so sorry.
No, she didn't.
Did you read your book, Cathy? I haven't read it yet.
Even things like, and I've known this happen, if you change the colour of paper that you write on.
Yeah.
So if you normally write on white paper, having like a pale yellow paper that you can write on, it because the brain takes in colour first, it can actually spark different thought processes in your brain if you write on. So you could even change the colour of the paper on your screen or something like that. If you work mainly on I tend to write on paper and then transfer it onto there because I like my pencils. So, you know, it's that sort of thing. So even if you can't physically go, because I normally go to the bar restaurant at the top of the road if I want to get something, and I know I can't go there. But if you change things like go to, maybe if you've got another room, you can go to another room, or as I say, change the colour of the paper, change the colour of the pen that you use. It will have a really big impact. Any other thoughts or suggestions? Angus?
I think a lot of ideas and suggestions that come out.
Could we just go to Angus, because he did wait?
Oh, sorry.
Can't hear you.
Still can't hear you.
No. Can you pull your headphones out? No. Sorry. Put it into chat.
Yeah, type it.
Type it into chat. While Angus is doing that, Chris, sorry, we'll pop back to you.
Yeah, thank you. In a short space of time, a lot of ideas have come forward, which I think is very, very good. I guess when we talked about best practice, we talked about culture, and I think, you know, is it possible to have a quick summary, some quick bullet points of what's been discussed today? Because I think putting them in front of clients and just encapsulating them and making them part of the overall toolbox would be very, very helpful, because it's made me think twice, and perhaps... I know I'm not creative necessarily, but I know I can be creative and I need to be. And I think it's bringing out skills that some of us may not think we have or don't think are that good, but we all possess as business people, as entrepreneurs, as people who are sort of, and people who are working with clients as well, and putting the ideas in their minds. So if you have got a moment, Cathy, to perhaps give us sort of 10 bullet points on Eureka books and melting.
Yeah,
books.
Absolutely.
So I think it'd be very, very helpful for all of us, please.
Yeah, what I'll do is, I know Georgina does the recordings of these sessions, so I'll put onto the recording and I'll pull off some bits and pieces. And as I say, if people have got some examples of particular businesses that they've been working with, I think probably over the last, it doesn't have to be over the last few months, but, you know, I think it would sort of hone it in terms of forced creativity, as it were, and we could actually do something about the changes that they've actually made. I think that would actually make a nice piece for the website, and for people then to look at and get some inspiration from.
The mother of invention, I think, is the phrase, isn't it?
Yeah, and Angus has put into chat about having a meeting with your eyes closed. And yeah, it changing the ambience of a space So having it slightly darker than normal, getting people to close their eyes, things like non-word based classical music in the background can actually help with that as well, because I hate to be nerdy here, but particularly Baroque music, which is very cyclical in its repetition, it just helps it puts you into a slightly meditative state, which means that it does then open up parts of the brain that perhaps maybe you lock them off because you're being sensible you. So I think that's good. And yeah, somebody also put their silence. I find that one really hard, personally.
I did my A level and I was extremely creative during my teen years, and then I went into my father's business, and then when he sold that, I went into local government because I didn't know what I was going to do, and thought I was going to stay there a couple of years, and ended up staying eight and a half, 9 years, and it kills you, really, and you don't realise what's happening because it happens. It's a slow process because you start off being creative within the organisation and realise that actually there's no space for creativity in local government because nobody wants to know. No. Nobody wants your ideas, and because either there's no money or no process, or you're thinking beyond your pay level, and all that scenario comes out, and you just get kicked in between the legs, really, to be quite honest, and it kills you. And then when the boys were born, and Helen didn't even know I drew, and I was drawing cartoons, I was drawing Disney characters, and it all just fell out.
Yeah, Chris, you can say.
Well, some of you will know or may not know, I'm a county councillor in East Sussex. I've been on the East Sussex County Council for nearly 20 years. And I survived despite it. So, but I can remember saying to a senior officer some years back, we need some creativity around here. We need some ideas around here. We need some ideas, people. Oh, you can't do that. There's no room for those sort of people. This was a senior director. I just couldn't believe it. No, there we were trying to work out how to balance the budget, how to get things done. All it's ever about is cut. All it is about, and then it's the process. It's just so slow. It's so sluggish. It's so unimaginative. I think we've seen the enormous contrast in the past 3 months. It's becoming a cliche, that phrase, isn't it? Between the sluggish, slow, sclerotic public sector and the creative, imaginative, go-ahead public sector. But my youngest daughter worked for McLaren, who were part of the ventilator program, and the things they were doing back in March, the work that McLaren were doing with Mercedes and British Aerospace to get things done, to get ventilators built, was extraordinary, whilst Public Health England plodded along doing the same old thing for the same old time. Simon and I have had lots of discussions about the public sector and mentoring within the public sector. We won't go into details of it, but there's such a massive contrast between the people.
I've worked on both sides of the fence, and they're both as bad as each other. They're only good if you've got people that are good in them, and they're bad if you've got bad people in them. And I think that's the thing. And going back to something that David said earlier about organisations and encouraging perhaps creativity and innovation, it really depends on the culture in that space. And there are some highly creative large industries, and then there are some industries that you think would be highly creative. I'm thinking of perhaps some of the online providers that you think would be, that are not. And I think it just all comes out from how they structure in there and what they encourage the staff to do and how they encourage staff to do it, and whether they see it as something that will drive the business forward or whether it will be a nuisance. all these people coming up with all these ideas when all we want to do is sell this thing. I wonder whether some of that comes into it too.
May I tell a brief true story? When I first joined PwC, the accounting firm, there was a convention at the Carroll Service. The senior partner read one of the lessons, and one of the juniors read one of the lessons, and I was at random, was picked out at one of the juniors. And I was standing side by side with a senior partner of PwC, absolutely terrified that my entire career depended on my lesson reading. And he looked at his watch, and he had a Mickey Mouse watch. And I just thought, if he's got a Mickey Mouse watch, I haven't got anything to worry about. And it was revolutionary for me. And often we can be terrified by our fears that are just in our head. And actually, we're all equal. We're all naked at the end of the day, and we do our best, and that is good enough.
Absolutely. And I think that's a really, really strong point, is the fact that, I mean, if you are in a space where you find you are stifled, then it's to you to find a space within which you're not. And for me, this last 3 months has been the busiest ever in my business. And one of the reasons for that is that there are a lot of people who have been put onto furlough or have started working from home, and they thought, I'm not getting back on a train. I'm not getting back.
Showing my Mickey Mouse on my watch.
and I think we are going to have a massive spike in terms of business startup, particularly on the micro end. I think we're going to have a lot of people who have been maybe running side hustles who are actually going to say, okay, now's the time for me to jump ship. I don't want to go back to that place again. I don't want to do that thing again. People who have thought, well, you know, I can manage my life and myself around doing this kind of thing. So I'm wondering, you know, I think that there will probably be, in January, we'll see the numbers when they do the analysis of startup numbers. I think we're going to see a spike towards the end of this year. Simon.
So one of the insurance companies in the city went back to work week before last, so Monday last week, and they put the invitation out to their staff to come in if they wanted to. So it was a voluntary thing. And I think they've got 80 staff in their office. 7 turned up. Mm-hmm. And of the 80 or of the 73 that didn't turn up, 13 wrote resignation letters.
Yeah.
So they don't want to come back.
I think this is going to be a massive change.
That's an incredible number, isn't it?
I think people have realised, you know, that there is, I think this has brought home to a lot of people the value of life, but also the impact that things can have, and, you know, putting stuff off.
And what we've seen,
doing the thing that you want to do, is like, let's just give it a go. Let's see how it goes.
And seeing home inquiries for purchases of homes near the coast have rocketed, gone up over 40%.
Yeah. Well, I live by the seaside, and
I know you do.
Even though there's a pandemic where I live, which is why I tend not to leave my street.
We've had that down here as well, had big surge. People want, we're 50 miles from London, people want to get out of London. Yes. The countryside, and there's been a big surge in inquiry. It's been those, heard a lot of the grapevine, and not anecdotally about it.
I think what's made it happen is the fact that people now realise they can work from home,
yes,
and they don't have to commute into London as often or at all, and they don't have to live, you know, within an hour's commute of London. They can now be anywhere in the country and still perform their job.
I've always maintained that the problem with public transport has been caused by people leaving a nice warm home with a computer in it and going and sitting in somebody else's space in front of their computer, rather than saving their 3 hours a day traveling backwards and forwards and being more productive. So, and I think that may well have an impact in terms of the types of businesses that we see being started over the next 6 months. The types of people that are starting business, I think they're probably going to be a profile where, I know with a new venture that I'm involved in, 17 and 18 year olds who are not going off to university and not picking up their apprenticeships are looking at actually, well, what can I do now with the skill set that I've already got? And also a massive growth in the 50 plus group as well. So, yeah, I think that we need to keep our eyes peeled for those. And I think with those groups as well, encouraging their innovative ideas and encouraging them in creating a business that sustains whatever lifestyle it is that they decided that they want. I think that is something that we can keep our eyes open for too.
Mm. Matthew, one thing from me, it also highlights for me the importance of teams. Because I'm involved with quite a few businesses where the entrepreneur is incredibly creative, and that is great. But part of the challenge is, and I'm completely clear, that's where the value's created, and yet somehow it has to translate into income and a business. And certainly one of the guys I work with, he could file a new patent every single week, but we'd never get a product to market. So I think, you know, it's knowing what you are, isn't it? And knowing your team and understanding who are the true plants who are going to create that wizardry.
And that's the point of a team, isn't it? Is that people have a different role, and, you know, some people's role may be to be more creative, whereas another person's role is to be much more on the structural organization delivery side. But it doesn't mean you can't be creative within structure and organization. So
so I work with a furniture manufacturer, very high-end furniture in a lovely near Stoke-on-the-Wold in Gloucestershire. And I mean, he's been in business 27 years now, and you know what he misses? He misses making furniture. Because he's got a workshop, he's got 6-7 people in it, and he's bogged down with the business rubbish that he doesn't want to do. And he said, you know what? He said, I want to make furniture. I don't want to run a business. And the creatives are like that, and the inventors are like that. Inventors want to invent. You know, if you can leave an inventor in their shed, or, you know, whatever their hole looks like, they'll stay in there and they'll invent. They'll never get a product to market.
Well, then he needs to bring in a business manager.
Absolutely.
Get back to doing his furniture making. Yeah. That's absolutely true, but it's the same in employment. Quite often, you're really good at something, so they promote you to manage that thing rather than do that thing. And often, those people aren't the best managers.
No.
So, yeah, it can be a vicious circle. I'm conscious of time, folks, because we're coming up
another
to 12 now, and so. I just wanted to say thank you very much for coming along this morning. I hope that you've found that discussion helpful, useful, taking on Chris's point. Let's pull some notes together. In the meantime, if you want to send me anything, I'll just put my email in here. So if you want to email me anything about, you know, any great ideas that you've seen, any businesses that you say, look, I want to highlight these as an example of somewhere I think they've done a really good job, that would be absolutely great. And I think that would make a nice piece of content on the ABM site, because I think that would work really well. So thank you very much.
Connects with what I asked for the other week, in that case studies and testimonials from your clients are absolutely 100% what we need for the website and blogs. Nothing better than recommending, you know, the outcome of a great mentor working with you in your business. So if we can encourage that from our members as well, that'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. So thanks very much, folks. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, Kathy.
And have a really smashing weekend.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Kathy. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.